Moralia, Regum et Imperatorum Apophthegmata. Artaxerxes, king of the Persians, most mighty imperator Caesar Trajan, thought it no less kingly and humane a thing to receive small gifts graciously and eagerly than to give great ones. For when he was riding along the road and a common laborer, a private man who had nothing else, scooped up water from the river in both hands and offered it to him, he received it gladly and smiled, measuring the gift by the giver's eagerness and not by the usefulness of what was given. Lycurgus made the sacrifices at Sparta very inexpensive, so that the Spartans might always be able to honor the gods readily and easily from whatever they had at hand. It is in some such spirit that I too now offer you simple gifts and guest tokens, common first fruits from philosophy. And along with the eagerness, please accept also the usefulness of these memorable sayings, if indeed they provide some standard for understanding the characters and the guiding purposes of leading men, since these are revealed more clearly in their words than in their deeds. And yet this collection also contains lives of the most illustrious among both Romans and Greeks, commanders, lawgivers, and emperors. But most of their actions have chance mixed into them, whereas the things that occur alongside their deeds and their passions and their fortunes, declarations and exclamations, as though in mirrors, present each man's mind for clear observation. It was for this reason, too, that Psaramnes the Persian, to those who marveled that although his words showed good sense, his actions did not turn out well, said that he himself was master of his words, but that fortune, together with the king, was master of his actions. There then, the declarations of these men, together with their corresponding actions placed beside them, wait for a listener with leisure to spare. But here the sayings themselves, gathered by themselves like samples and seeds of their lives, will, I think, cause you no trouble in the reading, since in brief compass you get a review of many men worthy of remembrance. The Persians are fond of griffins, because Cyrus, who was the most beloved of their kings, had a hooked, griffin-like appearance. Cyrus used to say that men force others to provide good things for them when they are unwilling to provide them for themselves, and that it belongs to no one to rule who is not better than those he rules. When the Persians wished to exchange their own mountainous and rugged land for a level and soft country, he did not allow it, saying that both the seeds of plants and the lives of men grow to resemble the lands they live in. Darius, the father of Xerxes, used to praise himself by saying that in battles and amid dangers he became more prudent. Having set the tribute for his subjects, he summoned the leading men of the provinces and asked them about the tribute, whether it was oppressive, and when they said it was moderate, he ordered each to pay only half. And once, having opened a large pomegranate, when someone asked him what he would wish to have in such quantity as the number of its seeds, he said, "Men like Zopyrus." For Zopyrus was a good man and a friend of his. And when Zopyrus mutilated himself, cutting off his own nose and ears, and thereby deceived the Babylonians, and being trusted by them, handed the city over to Darius, Darius often said he would not wish to have 100 Babylons at the price of not having Zopyrus whole. Semiramis, for her part, had a tomb built for herself and inscribed on it, "Whatever king has need of money, let him open this monument and take as much as he wishes." So Darius opened it, but found no money. Instead, he came upon other writing which said, "If you were not an evil man and insatiable for money, you would not have disturbed the resting places of the dead." When Ariamenes, the brother of Xerxes, son of Darius, was disputing with him over the kingship, he was coming down from Bactria. So Xerxes sent him gifts, ordering those who delivered them to say, "With these Xerxes your brother honors you now, but if he is proclaimed king, you shall be greatest of all in his court." And when Xerxes was declared king, Ariamenes at once did obeisance to him and put the diadem on him, and Xerxes in turn gave him the rank second after himself. Angered at the Babylonians when they revolted, and having overpowered them, he ordered that they should carry no weapons, but should play the harp and the flute, keep brothels, run taverns, and wear robes with folds like women's garments. He said he would not eat Attic dried figs brought to him for sale, but only when he had won the land that produces them. When he caught Greek spies in his camp, he did them no harm, but ordered them to be shown the army freely and then let them go. Artaxerxes, son of Xerxes, called Longhand because his one hand was longer than the other, used to say that it was more kingly to add than to take away. And he was the first to order that, among those hunting with him, whoever was willing and able should throw the first spear. He was also the first to establish a punishment for offending officials that, instead of having their bodies whipped and their heads plucked bald, they should be whipped after removing their garments, and have their tiaras removed instead of having their hair plucked. When he learned that Satabarzanes, his chamberlain, had asked him for something unjust, and discovered that he had done this for 30,000 derricks, he ordered his treasurer to bring 30,000 derricks. And giving them to him, he said, "Take these, Satabarzanes, for by giving them I shall not be poorer, but by doing what you asked I would have become more unjust." Cyrus the Younger, urging the Spartans to be his allies, said that his brother had a heavier heart, could drink more unmixed wine than he, and bore it better. But that his brother could scarcely stay on his horse when hunting, and in dangers could not even stay on his throne. He urged them to send men to him, promising to give horses to those who came on foot, chariots to those with horses, villages to those who owned land, and to make masters of cities those who owned villages. And as for silver and gold, he promised there would be no counting it, only weighing. Artaxerxes, the brother of this man, called Neman, not only made himself freely accessible to all who approached him, but also ordered his lawful wife to have the curtains of her carriage removed, so that those with requests might approach her along the road. When a poor man brought him an apple of extraordinary size, he received it gladly and said, "By Mithras, this man seems to me capable, if entrusted with a small city, of making it great." And once, in a certain flight, when his baggage had been plundered, he ate dried figs and barley bread and said, "What pleasure I had never known!" Parasades, the mother of Cyrus and Artaxerxes, used to tell anyone who was about to speak frankly to the king to use words of fine linen. Orontes, son-in-law of King Artaxerxes, having fallen into disgrace through the king's anger and been condemned, said that just as the fingers of accountants can represent now tens of thousands, now single units, so too the friends of kings can at one time have all power, and at another the least. Memnon, who fought against Alexander on behalf of King Darius, struck with his spear a mercenary soldier who was speaking many abusive and insolent things about Alexander, and said, "I feed you to fight, not to abuse Alexander." The kings of Egypt, by their own law, made their judges swear an oath that even if the king should order them to render some unjust judgment, they would not render it. Polites, king of the Thracians, at the time of the Trojan War, when envoys came to him from both the Trojans and the Achaeans together, told Alexander Paris that he should give back Helen and take from him two beautiful women instead. Teres, father of Sitalces, used to say that whenever he was at leisure and not on campaign, he thought he differed in no way from his own grooms. Cotys, in return for a gift of a leopard, gave back a lion. Being by nature quick to anger and a harsh punisher of those who erred in his service, when a stranger once brought him fragile and delicate earthenware vessels, cleverly and exquisitely worked with carvings and engravings, he gave gifts to the stranger, but the vessels he smashed all of them, saying, "So that I may not, out of anger, punish more harshly those who break them." Identhiasis, king of the Scythians, against whom Darius crossed the river, tried to persuade the tyrants of the Ionians to break the bridge over the Ister and depart, and when they were unwilling to do so, out of loyalty to Darius, he called them good and unresisting slaves. Antias wrote to Philip, "You rule the Macedonians, men trained to make war on men, but I rule the Scythians, who can also fight hunger and thirst." When Philip's envoys came to him, he was curricombing his own horse and asked them, "Does Philip do this too?" And when he took Ismenias, the finest flute player, captive, he ordered him to play the flute. And when the others marveled at the playing, he himself swore that he found more pleasure in hearing his horse neigh. Siluros, who left behind 80 sons, when he was about to die, held out a bundle of javelins to each of them and told them to break it. And when all of them gave up, he himself drew out the javelins one by one and easily broke every one, teaching them thereby that as long as they stood together they would remain strong, but if they broke apart and fell into faction, they would be weak. Gelon the tyrant, when he had defeated the Carthaginians in war, in making peace with them, forced them to write into the treaty that they would also stop sacrificing their children to Cronus. He often led the Syracusans out, as though on campaign, but really to planting, so that the land might be improved through cultivation, and the men themselves not grow worse through idleness. And when he asked money from the citizens and they raised an uproar, he told them to ask for it back as a loan to be repaid, and he repaid it after the war. Once at a banquet, when the lyre was being passed around and the others in turn tuned it and sang, he ordered his horse brought in and leapt lightly and easily onto it. Hiero, who was tyrant after Jelen, used to say that no one who spoke frankly to him was ever untimely in doing so. He thought that those who divulged a secret wronged not only themselves, but also those to whom they divulged it. For we hate not only those who reveal things, but also those who hear what we do not wish revealed. When someone reproached him for the bad smell of his mouth, he blamed his wife for never having told him of it. And she said, "I thought that all men smelled that way." To Xenophanes of Colophon, who said that he could scarcely support two servants, he replied, "But Homer, whom you disparage, supports more than 10,000 even though he is dead." He fined Epicharmus, the comic poet, because he had said something indecent in the presence of Hiero's own wife. Dionysius the Elder, when the public speakers were being chosen by lot according to letter, and the letter M fell to him, when someone said, "You talk foolishly, Dionysius," using a word beginning with M, replied, "No, I shall be a monarch," also beginning with M. And having spoken publicly, he was immediately chosen general by the Syracusans. And when at the beginning of his tyranny he was under siege, the citizens having risen up against him, his friends advised him to give up his power, if he did not wish to be killed after being overpowered. But when he saw an ox being slaughtered quickly by a butcher and falling, he said, "Is it not shameful that we, fearing a death so brief, should abandon so great a power out of fear?" And when he learned that his son, to whom he intended to leave his rule, had seduced the wife of a free man, he asked him angrily what he was conscious of that had made him do such a thing. And when the young man said, "You did not have a tyrant for a father," he replied, "Nor will you have a son, unless you stop doing such things." Again, when he went in to see him and saw a great quantity of gold and silver cups, he cried out, "There is no tyrant in you, since with the very cups you take from me, you have made no friend for yourself." When he was exacting money from the Syracusans, and then saw them wailing and begging and saying they had none, he ordered other demands made of them, and did this two or three times. But when, after imposing still more, he heard that they were laughing and joking as they went about the marketplace, he ordered it stopped, saying, "Now they have nothing, since they hold us in contempt." When his mother, past marriageable age, wished to be given to a husband, he said that he could compel the laws of the city, but not the laws of nature. Though he punished other wrongdoers harshly, he spared the cut purses, so that the Syracusans might stop dining and getting drunk together. When a certain stranger claimed he would tell him privately and teach him how to foreknow those who plotted against him, he told him to speak. And when the man came forward and said, "Give me a talent so that you may seem to have heard the signs of the plotters," he gave it, pretending he had heard something and marveling at the man's method. To one who asked whether he had any leisure, he said, "May that never happen to me." And when he heard that two young men, over their wine, had said many abusive things about him and about his tyranny, he invited both to dinner. And seeing that one grew drunk and talkative, while the other drank sparingly and cautiously, he released the first as one who had spoken badly through drunkenness by nature, but put to death the second as ill-disposed and hostile by deliberate choice. When some blamed him for honoring and advancing a wicked man who was disliked by the citizens, he said, "But I actually want the man who is hated more than I am." And when envoys from Corinth, to whom he was offering gifts, declined them on account of the law which did not allow envoys to accept gifts from a ruler, he said they were doing a terrible thing, in doing away with the one good thing tyrannies have, and teaching that even to be well treated by a tyrant is a fearful thing. Hearing that one of his citizens had gold buried at home, he ordered him to bring it to him. And when the man secretly kept back a little and, moving to another city, bought a piece of land with it, Dionysius summoned him and ordered him to take back the whole amount, since he had begun to make use of his wealth and no longer rendered the useful useless. Dionysius, the younger, used to say that he supported many sophists, not because he admired them, but because he wished to be admired through them. When Polyxenus the dialectician said he refuted him, he replied, "To be sure, in words, but I refute you in deeds, for having abandoned your own affairs, you attend to me and to mine." After he fell from power to one who asked him, "What good did Plato and philosophy do you?" he said, "That I bear so great a change of fortune easily." And when asked how it was that his father, though poor and a private citizen, acquired the rule of Syracuse, while he himself, though he had it and was the son of a tyrant, lost it, he said, "My father entered upon his course of action when democracy was hated, but I when tyranny was envied." And when someone else asked him the same question, he said, "My father left me his own tyranny, but not his own fortune." Agathocles was the son of a potter, and when he became master of Sicily and was proclaimed king, he used to have earthenware cups set out alongside the golden ones, and would show them to the young men, saying that by such humble work as he had once done, he had now achieved such things, through diligence and courage. And once, while he was besieging a city, some of the men on the wall taunted him, saying, "O potter, how will you pay the soldiers' wages?" And he answered gently, smiling, "Whenever I take this city." When he had taken it by force, he sold the captives, and said, "If you abuse me again, I shall have to take the matter up with your masters." When the sailors of the Ithacans complained that his men, landing on their island, had carried off some of their livestock, he said, "Why, your own king came to us once, and not only took our sheep but blinded the shepherd besides." Dion, who had driven Dionysius out of his tyranny, on hearing that Callippus, the man he trusted most among his friends and guests, was plotting against him, could not bring himself to put him to the test, saying it was better to die than to live guarding oneself not only against enemies but against friends. Archelaus asked at a drinking party by one of his companions, a man agreeable enough but not exactly refined, for a golden cup, ordered his slave to give it to Euripides instead. When the man expressed surprise, Archelaus said, "You are fit to ask, but he is fit to receive even without asking." When a chattering barber asked him, "How shall I cut your hair?" he replied, "In silence." When Euripides at a banquet embraced and kissed the handsome Agathon, who by then had a beard, Archelaus said to his friends, "Do not be surprised, for even the autumn of the beautiful is beautiful." When Timotheus the singer to the lyre, having hoped for more and received less, showed plainly that he held it against him, and once, singing a certain little song with the words, "And you praise earth-born silver," aimed the gibe at him, Archelaus struck back at him, "And you ask for it." And when someone once splashed water on him, and his friends urged him to be angry at the man, he said, "No, he did not splash it on me, but on the man he took me to be." Theophrastus records of Philip, father of Alexander, that he surpassed the other kings not only in fortune but also in character, being more moderate than they. He used to say that the Athenians were fortunate, since they could find 10 generals every year. For he himself, in all his many years, had found only one general, Parmenio. When many successes and fine achievements were reported to him all in a single day, he said, "O fortune, do me some small ill in return for so many and so great goods." And when, after defeating the Greeks, some advised him to hold the cities with garrisons, he said he preferred to be called a good man for a long time rather than a master for a short one. When his friends urged him to banish a slanderer, he refused, saying he did not want the man going about elsewhere speaking ill of him. When Smicythus accused Nicanor of always speaking ill of Philip, and his companions thought he should be summoned and punished, Philip said, "But surely Nicanor is not the worst of the Macedonians. We must look into it, in case the fault lies with us." So, when he learned that Nicanor was hard pressed by poverty and had been neglected by him, he ordered that a gift be given to him. And when Smicythus again reported that Nicanor now went about praising him wonderfully to everyone, Philip said, "You see, then, that it lies with ourselves whether we are spoken well of or ill." He said he was grateful to the popular leaders of the Athenians, because by abusing him, they made him a better man, both in speech and in character. "For I try to prove them liars in both my words and my deeds at once." When those Athenians who had been captured at Chaeronea were released by him without ransom, but then demanded back their cloaks and bedding as well and complained to the Macedonians about it, Philip laughed and said, "Do the Athenians not think that they have been beaten by us at dice?" When his collarbone was broken in war and the attending doctor kept asking for something every day, he said, "Take whatever you like, you hold the key." Of two brothers, Amphotrus and Hecatorus, seeing that Hecatorus was sensible and capable, while Amphotrus was foolish and dull, he said that Hecatorus was both, and Amphotrus was neither. He said that those who advised him to treat the Athenians harshly were absurd, since they were urging a man who did everything and suffered everything for the sake of reputation to throw away the very theater of that reputation. Called on once to judge between two scoundrels, he ordered the one to flee Macedonia and the other to pursue him. When he was about to encamp in a fine spot and learned there was no fodder for the pack animals, he said, "Such is our life, must we live even by the schedule of donkeys?" Wishing to take a certain stronghold, and being told by his scouts that it was altogether difficult and impregnable, he asked whether it was so difficult that not even a donkey laden with gold could approach it. When the followers of Lasthenes of Olynthus complained and grew angry that some of Philip's men called them traitors, he said that Macedonians were by nature blunt and rustic, and called a spade a spade. He advised his son to deal graciously with the Macedonians, winning for himself the goodwill of the many, while it was still possible to be kindly toward them under another's rule as king. He advised that among the men of power in the cities one should acquire both the good as friends and the bad as well, and then make use of the one and use up the other. To Philo the Theban, who had been his benefactor and host when he lived in Thebes as a hostage, and who later would accept no gift from him in return, he said, "Do not deprive me of the one thing I cannot be beaten in, being overcome by kindness and gratitude." When many captives had been taken, he sold them sitting there himself, his tunic drawn up in an unseemly way. One of those being sold cried out, "Spare me, Philip, for I am your father's friend." When Philip asked, "How did that come about, and how, my good man?" the man said, "Come closer, I want to tell you privately." So when he was brought near, he said, "Pull your cloak down a little lower, you are sitting indecently like that." And Philip said, "Let him go, for he really was well disposed and a friend all along, unnoticed." Once, invited to dinner by a stranger, he brought many companions along the way, and seeing his host flustered because the preparations were not enough, he went ahead of his friends and told each of them to leave room for the cake course. And they, obeying and expecting it, ate little, and so there was enough for everyone. When Hipparchus of Euboea died, Philip was clearly grieved, and when someone said, "But surely he died in the prime of life," Philip answered, "For himself, yes, but for me too soon, for he died before I could repay him a gratitude worthy of our friendship." Learning that Alexander held it against him that he was fathering children by several women, he said, "Well then, since you will have many rivals for the kingship, prove yourself noble and good, so that you may win the kingdom not through me, but through yourself." He also urged Alexander to attend to Aristotle and study philosophy, "so that," he said, "you may not do many of the things which I now regret having done." When he had appointed one of Antipater's friends to be a judge, and then noticed that the man dyed his beard and his hair, he removed him from office, saying that a man not to be trusted in his hair should not be considered trustworthy in his affairs. Once, judging a case brought by a certain Machaetas and dozing off, he did not pay full attention to what was just and condemned the man. And when Machaetas cried out that he was appealing the verdict, Philip, angered, said, "To whom?" And Machaetas said, "To you yourself, O king, if you will listen wide awake and paying attention." At the time Philip got up and left it there, but afterward, being more himself and realizing that Machaetas had been wronged, he did not overturn the verdict, but paid the fine of the judgment himself. When Harpalus, on behalf of his kinsman and relative Crates, who was on trial for wrongdoing, asked that the penalty be paid so that Crates might be released from the trial and not be reviled, Philip said, "It is better that this man himself, rather than we, be spoken ill of on his account." When his friends grew indignant that the Peloponnesians, who had received good treatment from him, hissed him at the Olympic Games, he said, "What then if they should suffer ill?" Having slept a long while on campaign and then risen, he said, "I slept safely, for Antipater was keeping watch." And again, when he was sleeping by day and the Greeks gathered at his doors grew indignant and complained, Parmenio said, "Do not be surprised that Philip is sleeping now, for while you were sleeping, this man was awake." When a lyre player at dinner wished to correct him and lecture him about music, the player said, "May it never happen to you, O king, to fare so badly that you should know these matters better than I do. When he had quarreled with his wife Olympias and his son, and Demaratus of Corinth arrived, Philip asked him how the Greeks stood with one another. And Demaratus said, "You are certainly well placed to talk about the harmony of the Greeks, when your own household stands like this toward you." Philip, taking the point, put aside his anger and was reconciled with them. When a poor old woman insisted on having her case judged by him personally and kept pestering him, he said he had no time, and the old woman cried out, "Then do not be king either." He was so struck by what she said that he heard not only her case, but everyone else's at once. Alexander, while still a boy, took no joy in Philip's many successes, but said to the boys raised with him, "My father will leave nothing for me." And when the boys said, "But he is winning all this for you," he answered, "What good is it if I have much but achieve nothing?" Being light and swift of foot, and urged by his father to run the sprint at Olympia, he said, "Only if I were to have kings as my rivals." When a slave girl was brought to him late one evening to spend the night with him, he asked her, "Why so late?" And when she said, "I was waiting for my husband to go to bed," he sharply rebuked his attendants, as having very nearly made him an adulterer through their fault. When he was burning incense to the gods lavishly and taking great handfuls of frankincense, Leonidas, his tutor, who was present, said, "You may burn incense so extravagantly, my boy, once you have conquered the land that produces it." So when he had conquered it, he sent Leonidas a letter. "I have sent you 100 talents of frankincense and cassia, so that you need no longer be stingy toward the gods, knowing that we now hold the land that bears these spices too." When he was about to fight the battle at the Granicus, he urged the Macedonians to dine without stint and bring everything out into the open, since tomorrow they would be dining on the enemy's provisions. When a certain Paralus, one of his friends, asked for a dowry for his little daughters, he ordered 50 talents given to him. And when Paralus said 10 would be enough, Alexander said, "Enough for you to receive, perhaps, but not enough for me to give." He instructed his treasurer to give Anaxarchus the philosopher whatever he might ask. And when the treasurer reported that he was asking for 100 talents, Alexander said, "He does well to ask, since he knows he has a friend both able and willing to give such a sum." At Miletus, having seen many statues of athletes who had won at Olympia and Delphi, he said, "And where were such bodies as these when the barbarians were besieging your city?" When Ada, the queen of the Carians, kept sending him, out of her eagerness to please, dainties and pastries prepared with extravagant care by her own cooks and bakers, he said that he had better cooks of his own, for breakfast, a night march, and for dinner, a light breakfast. Once, when everything had been made ready for battle, the generals asked whether there was anything further needed besides these preparations. He said nothing, except that the beards of the Macedonians should be shaved. When Parmenio expressed surprise, he said, "Do you not know that in battle there is no better handhold than a beard?" When Darius offered him 10,000 talents and to divide Asia between them equally, and Parmenio said, "I would accept if I were Alexander," Alexander replied, "And so would I by Zeus if I were Parmenio." He answered Darius that the earth could not endure 2 sons, nor Asia 2 kings. When he was about to risk everything at Arbela, against 1,000,000 men drawn up against him, his friends came to him accusing the soldiers of talking among themselves in their tents and agreeing among themselves to bring none of the spoils to the royal treasury, but to keep the gain for themselves. He smiled and said, "You bring good news, for I hear the talk of men preparing to win, not to flee." And many of the soldiers, coming up to him, said, "O king, take courage, and do not fear the multitude of the enemy, for they will not withstand even our stench." As the army was being drawn up in battle order, seeing one of the soldiers fitting the throwing strap to his javelin, he expelled him from the phalanx as useless, for the man is only now getting ready, when the time has come to use his weapons. When he was reading a letter from his mother containing secret accusations against Antipater, with Hephaestion, as usual, reading along beside him, he did not stop him. But when he had finished reading it, he took off his own ring and pressed the seal to Hephaestion's lips. When the prophet at the temple of Ammon addressed him as son of Zeus, he said it was no wonder, for Zeus is by nature the father of all, but he makes the best of them his own. When he was struck by an arrow in the leg, and many of those who habitually called him a god ran up to him, he said, with a smile spreading over his face, "This, as you see, is blood, and not the ichor that flows in the veins of the blessed gods." When some praised Antipater's frugality, for living simply and austerely, Alexander said, "On the outside Antipater wears a plain white border, but within he is purple through and through." Once in winter and cold weather, when one of his friends was entertaining him and brought in a small brazier with a meager fire, Alexander told him to bring in either more wood or frankincense instead. When Antipatrides brought a beautiful lyre girl to dinner, Alexander, struck by her looks, asked Antipatrides whether he happened to be in love with the woman. And when the man admitted it, Alexander said, "You wretch, will you not take the woman away from the banquet at once?" Again, when Cassander tried to force a kiss from Pytho, the beloved of Euias the flute player, Alexander, seeing Euias distressed, leapt up in anger against Cassander, crying out, "Is it not even permitted, thanks to you, for a man to be in love?" When he was sending the sick and disabled Macedonians back to the sea, one man who was not sick had himself enrolled among the sick. When he was brought before Alexander and questioned, he admitted that he had given a false excuse because he was in love with Telesippa, who was leaving for the coast. Alexander asked, "To whom should one apply about Telesippa?" And on learning that she was a free woman, said, "Well then, Antigens, let us persuade Telesippa to stay with us for to force her, for since she is free, it is not for us to force her." When some Greek mercenaries in the enemy's service fell into his hands, he ordered the Athenians kept in chains, on the ground that they took pay for soldiering while drawing public support from home, and likewise the Thessalians, because they neglected to farm the best land in Greece. But he released the Thebans, saying, "These alone, because of us, have neither city nor country left." When an Indian reputed to be the best of archers, said to be able to shoot an arrow through a ring, was taken prisoner, Alexander ordered him to give a demonstration. When the man refused, Alexander grew angry and ordered him put to death. But as the man was being led away, he told his escort that he had not practiced for many days and was afraid of missing. When Alexander heard this, he was astonished and released him with gifts, because the man had preferred to die rather than appear unworthy of his own reputation. When Taxiles, one of the kings of India, met him and urged him neither to fight nor to make war, but if Alexander were the weaker to accept good treatment, and if the stronger to do good in turn, Alexander answered that this very question, which of them should prevail by doing good, was what must be fought over. And hearing about the famous rock of Yornos in India, that the place was hard to take, but its holder was a coward, he said, "Now the place is easy to take." When another man who held a rock thought impregnable surrendered himself along with the rock to Alexander, Alexander ordered him to command his own forces and added territory besides, saying, "This man seems to me to have good sense, for he trusted himself to a good man rather than to a strong position." After the capture of the rock, when his friends said that he had surpassed Heracles in his exploits, he replied, "But I do not consider my own achievements, together with my command, worth a single word of Heracles." When he noticed that some of his friends were not playing but gambling in earnest at dice, he fined them. Among his foremost and best friends, he seemed to honor Craterus most of all, but to love Hephaestion. "For Craterus," he said, "loves the king, but Hephaestion loves Alexander." When he sent 50 talents to Xenocrates the philosopher and Xenocrates would not accept them, saying he had no need of them, Alexander asked, "Does Xenocrates then have no friend either? For my part," he said, "even the wealth of Darius has barely sufficed for my friends." When Porus, after the battle, was asked by Alexander, "How am I to treat you?" he said, "Like a king," and on being asked further, "Nothing else," he replied, "Everything is contained in like a king." Alexander, admiring both his good sense and his manly courage, added to him more territory than he had held before. On learning that someone was slandering him, he said, "It is a king's lot to be spoken ill of for doing good." As he lay dying, looking upon his companions, he said, "I see that my funeral will be a great one." When he had died, Demades the orator said that the Macedonian camp, through lack of a leader, looked like the blinded Cyclops. Ptolemy, son of Lagus, for the most part dined and slept at his friends' houses, and whenever he himself gave a dinner, he would send for their cups and coverlets and tables, since he himself possessed nothing beyond what was necessary, but said that it was more kingly to make others rich than to be rich oneself. Antigonus collected money strenuously, and when someone said, "But Alexander was not like this," he replied, "Naturally, he was reaping Asia, but I am gleaning after him." Seeing some of his soldiers playing ball in their breastplates and helmets, he was pleased and summoned their officers, wishing to praise them. But when he heard that the men were in fact drinking, he gave those officers commands to the soldiers instead. When all marveled that, now an old man, he behaved gently and mildly in his affairs, he said, "Formerly I had need of power, but now of glory and goodwill." When his son Philip, in the presence of a good many people, asked him, "When are we going to break camp?" he said, "Are you afraid you alone will not hear the trumpet?" When the young man was eager to take lodging with a widow who had three attractive daughters, Antigonus called the officer in charge of billeting and said, "Will you not get my son out of these cramped quarters?" After a long illness, when he had recovered, he said, "It was no bad thing. The illness reminded us not to think too highly of ourselves, since we are mortal." When Hermodotus, in his poems, called him a son of the sun, he said, "My chamberpot bearer knows nothing of this." When someone said that all things are fine and just for kings, he said, "Yes, by Zeus, for the kings of barbarians. But for us, only fine things are fine, and only just things are just." When his brother Marcius was on trial and asked that his case be heard privately at home, he said, "No, it shall be in the marketplace before everyone if we are doing nothing wrong." Once, in winter, in a region short of supplies, he was forced to encamp, and some of the soldiers, not knowing he was nearby, cursed him. Parting the tent flap with his staff, he said, "You will be sorry unless you move further off before you curse us." When Aristodemus, one of his friends who was reputed to have been a cook's son, advised him to cut back his expenditures and gifts, he said, "Your words, Aristodemus, smell of the apron." When the Athenians enrolled one of his slaves as a citizen, honoring him as a free man, he said, "I would not wish a single Athenian to be flogged by me." When a young pupil of Anaximenes, the rhetorician, delivered before him a speech he had carefully prepared beforehand, Antigonus, wishing to learn something, questioned him. And when the young man fell silent, he said, "What do you say, or is this exactly what was written on your tablets?" Hearing another orator say that the season, bringing snow, had left the country bare of fodder, he said, "Will you not stop treating me as a crowd?" When Thrasyllus the cynic asked him for a drachma, he said, "That is not a kingly gift." And when the man said, "Then give me a talent," he replied, "That is not a cynic's due to receive." When he sent his son Demetrius with many ships and forces to free the Greeks, he said that this glory would be kindled, like a beacon from a watchtower in Greece, over the whole inhabited world. When Antigoras the poet was boiling a congeril and shaking the pan himself, Antigonus, standing behind him, said, "Do you think, Antigoras, that Homer boiled congers when he wrote of the deeds of Agamemnon?" And Antigoras replied, "But do you, O king, think that Agamemnon, while doing those deeds, busied himself with finding out whether anyone in the camp was boiling a conger?" Having seen in a dream Mithridates reaping a golden harvest, Antigonus resolved to kill him, and telling his son Demetrius, bound him by oath to silence. But Demetrius took Mithridates along and, walking with him beside the sea, wrote on the sand with the butt spike of his spear, "Flee, Mithridates." Understanding, the man fled to Pontus, and there he continued to reign. Demetrius, while besieging the Rhodians, captured in a certain suburb a panel painted by Protogenes the painter, depicting Iolysus. When the Rhodians sent envoys begging him to spare the painting, he said he would rather destroy the portraits of his own father than that picture. Having made a truce with the Rhodians, he left the siege engine behind with them, a monument at once of his own grandeur and of their courage. When the Athenians revolted, he captured the city, already suffering badly from famine, and immediately an assembly having been convened for him, gave them a free gift of grain. And while addressing them about this, he made a slip in grammar. When one of those seated said how the word ought to have been pronounced, correcting him, he said, "Well then, for this correction too, I grant you 5,000 more measures." Antigonus II, when his father Demetrius had been captured, and one of his friends sent word urging him to pay no attention to anything his father might write under compulsion from Seleucus, nor to give up any of the cities, wrote instead to Seleucus himself, surrendering to him his whole realm and offering himself as a hostage, on condition that his father Demetrius be released. When he was about to fight a naval battle against Ptolemy's generals, and the helmsman said the enemy's ships were far more numerous, he said, "And how many ships do you reckon me, myself present, worth?" Once, retreating before an advancing enemy, He said he was not fleeing, but pursuing an advantage that lay behind him. When a young man, son of a brave father but himself not thought a particularly good soldier, claimed he ought to receive his father's allowances, Antigonus said, "But I, young man, give pay and gifts for manly courage, not for having a courageous father." When Zeno of Citium died, the philosopher he admired most of all, he said that the theater of his own achievements had been taken away. Lysimachus, overpowered by Dromichetes in Thrace, and through thirst, surrendering both himself and his army when he had drunk after being taken prisoner, said, "O gods, for how small a pleasure have I made myself a slave instead of a king." To Philippides the comic poet, his friend and intimate, he said, "What of mine shall I share with you?" And Philippides replied, "Whatever you wish, except your secrets." Antipater, on hearing of Parmenio's death at Alexander's hands, said, "If Parmenio was plotting against Alexander, whom can one trust? But if not, what is to be done?" Of Demades the orator, now grown an old man, he said that, like a sacrificial victim, all that was left of him was the belly and the tongue. Antiochus III wrote to the cities that if he should ever issue an order contrary to the laws, they should disregard it, as issued in ignorance. Seeing the priestess of Artemis, who appeared exceedingly beautiful, he at once broke camp and left Ephesus, fearing lest he be forced against his judgment to do something unholy. Antiochus, son of Hierax. Antiochus, surnamed Hawk, made war on his brother Seleucus for the kingship. And when Seleucus, defeated by the Gauls, was nowhere to be found and was believed to have been cut down, Antiochus set aside his purple robe and put on a gray cloak. But shortly afterward, learning that his brother was safe, he offered thank offerings to the gods and had the cities under his rule wear garlands. Eumenes, plotted against by Perseus, was thought to have died. And when the report reached Pergamum, his brother Attalus put on the diadem, married his wife, and became king. But when he learned that his brother was approaching alive, he went to meet him just as he was accustomed, with his bodyguards, spear in hand. Eumenes greeted him warmly and, whispering in his ear, said, "Do not be in such a hurry to marry before you see me dead." And for the rest of his life said or did nothing else suspicious toward him, but even at his death left him his wife and kingdom. In return, Attalus, though he had many children of his own, raised none of them, but handed over the kingdom, while still living, to Eumene's son once he had come of age. Pyrrhus' sons, while still boys, asked him to whom he would leave the kingdom, and Pyrrhus said, "To whichever of you keeps the sharper sword." Asked whether Python or Caphyges was the better flute player, he said, "Polyperchon is the better general." When, having engaged the Romans, he won two victories but lost many of his friends and officers, he said, "If we win one more battle against the Romans, we are undone." When he sailed away from Sicily after his failure there, turning back to his friends, he said, "What a wrestling ground we are leaving for the Romans and the Carthaginians." When his soldiers addressed him as Eagle, he said, "Of course, how could I not be, when I am borne aloft by your weapons as by swift wings?" Hearing that some young men, while drinking, had said much that was abusive about him, he ordered them all brought before him the next day. When they were brought, he asked the first whether they had said these things about him, and the young man replied, "We did say that, O king, and we would have said more, if we had had more wine." Antiochus, who campaigned a second time against the Parthians, having strayed from his friends and attendants during a hunt and pursuit, entered unrecognized a farmstead of poor people. And over dinner, when the talk turned to the king, he heard it said that in other respects he was a good man, but, entrusting too much to worthless friends, he overlooked most things and often neglected what was necessary because he was too fond of hunting. At the time he said nothing, but at daybreak, when his guardsmen arrived at the farmstead and he was revealed, and the purple robe and diadem were brought to him, he said, "But it is only from this day that I have adopted you, yesterday, for the first time, I heard true words about myself." When the Jews, while he was besieging Jerusalem, asked for a 7-day truce for their greatest festival, he not only granted it, but also had bulls with gilded horns and a quantity of incense and spices paraded up to the very gates, and handing the sacrifice over to their priests, himself returned to his camp. The Jews, in astonishment, surrendered themselves to him immediately after the festival. Themistocles, while still a young man, used to roll about in drinking bouts and with women. But once Miltiades, as general, defeated the barbarians at Marathon, Themistocles was no longer to be found behaving disorderly. To those who marveled at the change, he said that Milchiade's trophy would not let him sleep or be idle. Asked whether he would rather have been Achilles or Homer, he said, "Would you yourself rather be the man who wins at Olympia or the one who proclaims the winners?" When Xerxes was coming down upon Greece with his great armada, Themistocles, fearing that Epicides the demagogue, a greedy and cowardly man, might become general and ruin the city, persuaded him with money to withdraw from the generalship. When Adeimantus, who did not dare to fight at sea, said to Themistocles, as he was urging and exhorting the Greeks, "Themistocles, at the games they whip those who start before the signal," Themistocles replied, "Yes, Adeimantus, but they do not crown those left behind." When Eurybates raised his staff as if to strike him, Themistocles said, "Strike, if you will, but hear me out." Failing to persuade Eurybates to fight in the straits, he secretly sent word to the barbarian king urging him not to fear the Greeks' flight. And when the king, persuaded, was defeated in the sea battle fought where it favored the Greeks, Themistocles again sent to him, urging him to flee to the Hellespont with all speed, as the Greeks were planning to break the bridge, so that in saving the Greeks, he might also seem to be saving him. When a man of Seriphus told him that he owed his fame not to himself but to his city, Themistocles said, "True, but I would not have become famous had I been a Seriphian, nor would you, had you been an Athenian." When Antiphates the Handsome, who had once spurned and scorned Themistocles' love later, once Themistocles had won great reputation and power, began to approach him and flatter him, Themistocles said, "Young man, we have both come to our senses late, but we have come to them." To Simonides, who was asking a favor for someone, unjust verdict from Simonides, he said that Simonides would no more become a good poet by singing out of tune than he himself would become a good magistrate by judging contrary to law. He used to say that his son, who ordered his mother about, had more power than anyone in Greece. For the Athenians ruled the Greeks, he ruled the Athenians, the boy's mother ruled him, and the boy ruled his mother. Of the suitors for his daughter, preferring the decent man to the wealthy one, he said he was looking for a man in need of money rather than money in need of a man. When selling a piece of land, he ordered the crier to announce that it also had a good neighbor. When the Athenians were abusing him, he said, "Why do you tire of being well served so often by the same man?" He compared himself to plane trees, under which people run for shelter when caught in a storm, but which, once fair weather returns, they strip and lop as they pass by. Mocking the Eretrians, he said that, like cuttlefish, they had a blade but no heart. When he was first driven out of Athens, and then out of Greece, he went up to the Persian king, and being ordered to speak, said that speech resembled embroidered tapestries. Like them, when unrolled it displayed its patterns, but when folded up it hid and spoiled them. He also asked for time, so that, having learned the Persian language, he might address the king himself and not through an interpreter. Having been honored with many gifts and quickly become rich, he said to his children, "Children, we would have been ruined if we had not been ruined." Myronides, leading a campaign against the Boeotians, ordered the Athenians to march out. When the hour arrived and the captain said not everyone was yet present, he said, "Those who are going to fight are present." And using these eager men, he defeated the enemy. Aristides the Just always conducted his political affairs on his own and avoided political clubs, on the ground that the power derived from friends encourages wrongdoing. When the Athenians were setting about an ostracism, an illiterate and uncouth man came up to him holding a potsherd and asked him to write on it the name of Aristides. "Do you actually know Aristides?" he asked. When the man said he did not know him, but was simply annoyed at his being called the Just, Aristides said nothing, wrote his own name on the shard, and gave it back. Though an enemy of Themistocles, when sent out as an envoy together with him, he said, "Themistocles, shall we leave our enmity behind at the border? For if it seems good, we can take it up again when we return." After assessing the tribute for the Greeks, he returned poorer by exactly the amount he had spent on the mission. When Aeschylus, writing of Amphiaraus, composed the lines, "For he wishes not to seem but to be the best, reaping the deep furrow of his mind, from which good counsels spring," at these words everyone turned to look at Aristides. Pericles, whenever he was about to take command, would say to himself as he put on his cloak, "Watch yourself, Pericles, you are about to rule free men, both Greeks and Athenians." He urged the Athenians to remove Aegina, like a piece of room, from the eye of the Piraeus. When a friend asked him for false testimony that was also to be given under oath, he said he was a friend only as far as the altar. When he was about to die, he counted himself blessed that no Athenian had ever put on mourning clothes because of him. Alcibiades, while still a boy, was caught in a hold in the wrestling school. Unable to escape, he bit the hand of the one throwing him. When the other said, "You bite like a woman," he replied, "No, indeed, like a lion." Owning a very beautiful dog he had bought for 7,000 drachmas, he cut off its tail, saying, "So that the Athenians will talk about this and pry into nothing else about me." Going into a schoolroom, he asked for a copy of a book of the Iliad. When the teacher said he had nothing of Homer's, Alcibiades gave him a punch and walked on. Coming to Pericles' door and learning that he had no time free because he was working out how to render his accounts to the Athenians, he said, "Would it not be better to work out how not to render them at all?" When summoned by the Athenians from Sicily to stand trial on a capital charge, he went into hiding, saying it was foolish, when facing a court case, to seek acquittal when one could simply flee instead. When someone said, "Do you not trust your homeland to judge your case?" he replied, "No, not even my mother, for fear she might cast the black pebble by mistake instead of the white one." On hearing that a death sentence had been passed against him and those with him, he said, "Let us then show them that we are alive," and, turning to the Spartans, he stirred up the Decelian War against the Athenians. Lamachus was reprimanding one of his captains for an error. When the man said he would not do it again, Lamachus said, "In war there is no doing it twice." Iphicrates, thought to be the son of a shoemaker, was despised for it. He first won renown when, though wounded, he seized an enemy soldier alive together with his weapons and carried him off to his own trireme. Once, encamped in a friendly and allied country, he was carefully building a palisade and digging a trench, when someone said, "What is there for us to fear?" He replied that the worst thing a general could say was, "I did not expect it." When drawing up his forces against the barbarians, he said he was afraid that they did not know Iphicrates, the name with which he terrified his other enemies. Standing trial on a capital charge, he said to his accuser, "What are you doing, man, with war upon us, persuading the city to deliberate about me instead of with me?" To Harmodius, descendant of the ancient Harmodius, who taunted him for his low birth, he said, "My family begins with me, yours ends with you." When an orator in the assembly asked him, "Just what are you that you think so highly of yourself, a cavalryman, a hoplite, an archer, or a peltaste?" he replied, "None of these, but the man who knows how to command all of them." Timotheus was considered a lucky general, and some who envied him used to paint pictures of cities walking into a fishing net of their own accord while he slept. Timotheus would say, "If I capture such great cities while asleep, what do you suppose I would do awake?" When one of the daring generals was displaying a wound to the Athenians, Timotheus said, "As for me, I was ashamed that, while I was your general at Samos, a catapult bolt fell anywhere near me." When the orators were promoting Chars and claiming that this was the sort of man the Athenian general should be, Timotheus said, "Not the general, rather the man who carries the general's bedding." Chabrias used to say that the best generals were those who knew the enemy's affairs best. When standing trial for treason together with Iphicrates, Iphicrates rebuked him for going to the gymnasium and eating lunch at his usual hour even while in such danger. Chabrias said, "Well then, if the Athenians decide against us for any other reason, they will put you to death squalid and unfed, and me well lunched and freshly oiled." He used to say that an army of deer led by a lion was more fearsome than an army of lions led by a deer. When Hegesippus, nicknamed Crobylus, was urging the Athenians on against Philip, someone in the assembly shouted out, "You're proposing war." "Yes, by Zeus," he said, "and black mourning garments, public funerals, and funeral orations too, if we are to live as free men and not do what the Macedonians order." Pythias, while still a young man, came forward to speak against the decrees being drawn up in honor of Alexander. When someone said, "You dare, young as you are, to speak on matters of such magnitude," he replied, "Well, Alexander, whom you're voting to be a god, is younger than I am." Phocion the Athenian was seen by no one either laughing or weeping. Once in the assembly, when someone said, "You look as though you're thinking hard, Phocion," he replied, "You guess rightly, I am thinking whether I can cut anything out of what I am about to say to the Athenians." When an oracle was given to the Athenians that there was one man in the city who opposed the opinions of everyone else, and the Athenians called out demanding to know who he was, Phocion said that he himself was that man. for he alone was pleased by none of what the majority did and said. Once, when he was delivering an opinion to the assembly and finding favor, and saw everyone alike approving his speech, he turned to his friends and said, "Surely I haven't said something bad without realizing it." When the Athenians were asking for contributions toward some sacrifice and everyone else was contributing, and he was called on repeatedly, he said, "I would be ashamed to give to you while not repaying this man," pointing at the same time to his creditor. When Demosthenes the orator said, "The Athenians will kill you if they go mad," he replied, "Yes, me, if they go mad, you, if they come to their senses." When Aristogiton the informer, condemned and about to die in prison, sent asking Phocion to come to him, and his friends tried to stop him from going to see such a wicked man, Phocion said, "And where would one more gladly talk with Aristogiton?" When the Athenians were angry at the Byzantines for not admitting into their city Chars, who had been sent with a force to help them against Philip, Phocion said, "We should be angry not at the allies who distrust us, but at the generals who are distrusted." And he himself was chosen general. And being trusted by the Byzantines, he made Philip withdraw, having accomplished nothing. When King Alexander sent him a gift of 100 talents, he asked the men bringing it why, when there were so many Athenians, Alexander was giving this to him alone. And when they said it was because Alexander considered him alone to be a true gentleman, he said, "Then let him allow me both to seem and to be such a man." When Alexander was demanding triremes, and the people called on Phocion by name to come forward and give his advice, he stood up and said, "My advice to you, then, is either to be masters by force of arms, or to be friends of those who are masters." When an unverified report of Alexander's death arrived, and the orators leapt straight up onto the platform urging that there be no delay, but that they go to war at once, Phocion insisted on waiting and finding out for certain. "For if he is dead today," he said, "he will still be dead tomorrow and the day after." When Leisthenes plunged the city into war, its spirits raised by bright hopes tied to the name of freedom and of leadership, Phocion compared his speeches to cypress trees. "For though they are handsome and tall," he said, "they bear no fruit." When the first engagement succeeded, and the city was offering sacrifices of good news, he was asked whether he would have wished these things to have been done by him. He said, "I would wish these deeds to have been done, but not that policy to have been decided on." When the Macedonians attacked Attica and were ravaging the coast, he led out the men of military age, and when many ran up to him urging him to seize that hill or station his forces there, he said, "Heracles, how many generals I see and how few soldiers." Nevertheless, he engaged them, prevailed, and killed Nicion, the Macedonian commander. A little later, the Athenians, defeated in the war, accepted a garrison from Antipater. And when Menelaus, the commander of the garrison, offered Phocion money, he angrily replied that Menelaus was no better than Alexander, and that the pretext on which he would now be taking it was worse, since he had refused it then. Antipater used to say that of his two friends at Athens, he had never persuaded Phocion to accept anything, nor had he ever managed to satisfy demands by giving. When Antipater asked him to do something unjust, he said, "You cannot, Antipater, have Phocion both as a friend and as a flatterer." After Antipater's death, when democracy was restored to the Athenians, a sentence of death was passed in the assembly against Phocion and his friends. The others were led off weeping, but as Phocion walked in silence, one of his enemies came up and spat in his face. Looking toward the magistrates, he said, "Will no one stop this man's disgraceful behavior?" When one of those about to die with him was lamenting and complaining, he said, "Are you not content, Thoutippus, to die together with Phocion?" As the cup was already being brought to him, he was asked whether he had any word for his son. "I charge you," he said, "and urge you to bear the Athenians no grudge." Peisistratus, tyrant of the Athenians, when some of his friends broke away from him and seized Phile, went to them himself, carrying his own bedroll. When they asked what he wanted, he said, "I have come packed and ready either to persuade you to come away with me, or, if I fail to persuade you to stay here with you, that is why I've come with my baggage." When his mother was maligned to him for being in love with a certain young man and secretly meeting with him, though the youth was fearful and mostly kept his distance, Peisistratus invited the young man to dinner and, after the meal, asked him how it had gone. When he said, "Pleasantly," Peisistratus said, You shall have the same, every day, if you please my mother. When Thrasybulus, in love with his daughter, met her and kissed her, his wife urged him to be angry at Thrasybulus. But he said, If we are to hate those who love us, what shall we do to those who hate us? And he gave the girl to Thrasybulus in marriage. When some revelers ran into his wife and did and said many outrageous things to her, and the next day came to Peisistratus begging and weeping, he said, For your part, try to behave yourselves from now on. As for my wife, she did not so much as leave the house at all yesterday. When he was about to marry another wife, and his children asked anxiously whether he had some fault to find with them, he said, Not at all, quite the opposite, I am praising you, and wish to have other children just like you. Demetrius of Phalerum advised King Ptolemy to acquire and read books on kingship and rule. For the things that friends do not dare to advise kings, these are written in books. Lycurgus, the Spartan, accustomed the citizens to wear their hair long, saying that for the handsome it made them more comely, and for the ugly it made them more terrifying. To the man who urged him to establish democracy in the city, he said, You first establish democracy in your own household. He ordered that houses be built using only the saw and the axe, since men would be ashamed to bring costly cups, bedding, and tables into houses built so plainly. He forbade contests in boxing and the pancration, so that the citizens would not grow accustomed to giving up even in play. He forbade campaigning against the same enemies too often, so as not to make them more warlike. Indeed, later, when Agesilaus was wounded, Antalcidas remarked that he was getting fine tuition fees from the Thebans, whom he had trained and taught to fight though they were unwilling. King Charilus, asked why Lycurgus had established so few laws, replied that men who used few words had no need of many laws. When one of the helots behaved rather insolently toward him, he said, By the twin gods, I would have killed you if I were not angry. To one who asked why they wore their hair long, he said that of all ornaments, this one cost the least. King Telecles, to his brother, who was complaining that the citizens treated him rather ungraciously, No, he said, for you do not know how to suffer wrong. When Theopompus, in a certain city, was shown its wall by a man who asked him whether he thought it fine and lofty, he said, Not even if it belonged to women. Archidamus, when in the Peloponnesian War the allies demanded that their contributions be fixed, said, War does not feed on a fixed ration. Brasidas, having caught a mouse among some dried figs and been bitten by it, let it go, and then said to those present, Nothing is so small that it cannot save itself if it dares to defend itself against its attackers. In battle, having been struck through his shield by a spear, he pulled the spear out of the wound and with that very weapon killed the enemy soldier. And when asked how he had been wounded, he said, My shield betrayed me. Since it happened that he fell while freeing the Greeks of Thrace, and the envoys sent to Laestemon called upon his mother, she first asked whether Brasidas had died nobly. And when the Thracians praised him and said that there would never be another like him, she said, You are mistaken, strangers, Brasidas was indeed a good man, but Laestemon has many better than he. King Agis said that the Lacedaemonians do not ask how many the enemy are, but where they are. And when he was being prevented at Mantinea from fighting the enemy, who were more numerous, he said, Whoever wishes to rule over many must fight against many. When the Eleans were being praised for conducting the Olympic Games so well, he said, What is so wonderful in their doing, once every 4 years on a single day, what is just? And when they persisted in their praise, he said, What is so wonderful if they handle a fine matter finely, namely, justice? To a wicked man who kept asking who was the best of the Spartans, he said, The one most unlike you. When another asked how many the Lacedaemonians were, he said, Enough to keep off the wicked. And when another asked the same thing, he said, They will seem many to you if you see them fighting.